This is Who Kicked the Corner Flag, an English soccer game show podcast. And here's your host, James Rose.
From Kansas City, Missouri, home of the new Super Bowl champions. Had to throw that in there. Hello and welcome to another EPL quizzical outing and the show that tests the soccer knowledge and shares all the banter. Despite still all being incredibly hungover, I'm here with the KC Spurs fan group leader and the man whose victory Sunday became super sweet. Two for two. It's Jerry Bustamante. How are you, bud?
I am fantastic.
I'm
there with you. it was both matches very I didn't have fun at all, frankly. It was nerve-wracking until it wasn't. Hats off to the Chiefs, and keep your eyes peeled on the television and social media. You're going to see something special with these celebrations coming up here this week. I guarantee it.
It's going to be pretty wild. Million in downtown Kansas City. We'll see. And of course, we're pleased to welcome back the leader of the KC Gooners and the man who couldn't quite celebrate two victories yesterday. So close. It's Royce Richardson. How are you, bud?
Pretty even. I'd say it's like a draw.
It's a draw.
Don't you live here? Come on, man.
Just so-so, right? Just kind of meh. Just average. We'll take it. Right, as usual, we'll start with question of the match, the contest where each person gets a statistical question from the most significant fixtures. Jared will get two topics from this category this week, and Boyce will get the extra rumor mill to follow. And it's 2 points for a correct guess. Here are those categories. Spurs shock City. Arsenal draw the Clarets. Hornets and Toffee share five. So, Jared, go ahead and pick one of those categories for us.
Oh, let's kick it off. Let's talk about Spurs and new signing Steven Bergwijn.
Oh, yeah, let's do that. Spurs stun current title holders Manchester City with a 2-0 victory thanks to goals from new kids Steven Bergwijn and Son Heung-min. Okay, here's your quiz question. Manchester City have now lost how many games this season? Is it four or six?
Oh, man. Six.
Good guess, sir. Yes, that is absolutely correct.
That was a blind guess.
Ooh, it was a good one. It'll get you those 2 points. It is now their joint most losses in a single campaign under Pep Guardiola. So good times all around there. So after City dominated shots on goal and possessions from this game, how did Spurs come away with the win here?
A little bit of luck. Mm-hmm. And a lot of bit of a incredibly poorly taken penalty by Gundogan there. I tell you what, you know, Spurs could have easily gone down two early in this match. Despite some actually pretty decent play from Serge Aurier and Jaffa Tanganga on the outside, I think it just highlighted how fast and dangerous this Manchester City squad is. That being said, I know we're going to get into this later. I'm not going to, you know, open the VAR box just yet. But it was one of those matches where you really felt like, you know, this could kind of go either way. You know, Spurs are just kind of sticking around, and it was every Manchester City supporter just going like, something is going to happen. And an absolute cracker from Steven Bergwijn, absolutely amazing. The red card, the double yellow for Zinchenko, didn't hurt either. And it was comfortable to have a non-controversial red card, double yellow. First for dissent, second for the tactical foul on Harry Winks. You know, that's absolutely a red. Mm-hmm. However, the fact that Raheem Sterling gets to continue playing with this stomp on Dele Alli, yet Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, in the exact same situation, loses the ball, comes back, makes contact with the ball, high studs, hits, VAR reviews it, it's a red card. How VAR looks at that and doesn't and awards a red for Aubameyang, but reviews it on Sterling and doesn't, it's just absolutely beyond me. Mm-hmm. They put away chances when we had them. I mean, Spurs, I think we had like three shots on goal.
I think that's about right, yeah.
Is so something silly. So look, if we keep converting 66% of our shots, then great, I'll take it. This is one where we just clearly, we had some things fall our way, absolutely. But, you know, credit where credit is due. You had an absolutely just a howler of a VAR situation where a penalty was awarded 2 minutes after the foul. And how you can tell me that that's clear and convincing evidence to award the penalty, I don't see it. I might be biased. But hats off to Hugo Lloris. And then VAR does something, again, correct in not awarding the second penalty that was called by Mike Dean for a perceived foul on Raheem Sterling by Hugo Lloris. A bonkers match. I am very stressed from this weekend. I needed the Chiefs to score 31 points in the first quarter so I could sit back and enjoy myself. But no, they were very selfish and made us all sit at the edge of our seats. So all in all, a little bit of luck. But, we did the things that we needed to do to win that match. And that Jose Pep rivalry there gets another chapter.
I don't know if you guys saw actually on the sidelines when Mourinho's assistant explained to him the situation that Raheem Sterling should have got another yellow card, or I can't remember how many cards. His immediate knee-jerk reaction was he was going from laughing to suddenly literally leaping out of a seat, charging towards the fourth official and saying, "What the hell is going on?" If you guys haven't seen it, I would highly encourage you to do it because it is it's pretty funny. All right, boys, Son City then. How do they respond? I mean, obviously we know now that Liverpool pretty much got this thing wrapped up in the Premier League. They obviously still in the hunt for the Champions League, but how do they respond moving forward now? Is it a case of, time for Pep to move on, or do they need to shore up more in the defensive area? What do we think on that?
Well, I think it's interesting because what you're really seeing here is the after effect of the injury to Laporte, and the fact that Manchester City, with its boundless, endless sums of money, doesn't have the requisite defenders in the squad is sort of mind-bending. I think with a fully healthy Laporte for all the matches that he missed and not the after effects of what's going on right now where he's coming back and trying to rehab his injury, I don't think Manchester City were going to catch Liverpool this year. But I think your question's well taken, because the situation that they're in right now is they are 22 points off the lead. They are 14 points ahead of Spurs right now. They're firmly situated within the top four because none of the other teams can really put anything together. So what they're playing for in the league is absolutely nothing. Maybe they'll put forth a good effort in the Champions League and potentially get a little bit further than the round of eight that they keep falling out of on a year-to-year basis. But Pep always sees out his contract. So I think he's got one more year left at City. I can't really see them lining up somebody to replace him. I mean, I'm not really sure that this year is totally on him. I think it's hard to find motivation in a situation where you're not really playing for anything. Mm-hmm. And I think the other reality here is the fact that, you touched on it earlier, Manchester City should have won this match. It's fall back to that Riyad Mahrez penalty against Liverpool last year. I don't know what's going on with City and why they can't find somebody to dispatch penalties, but it's a little bit ridiculous. Gundogan looked absolutely terrified when he went up to the spot at the beginning of a match that, if you're Manchester City, I think you go into thinking that you're the favorite. Why, when you're more or less dominating a game, you get the shakes is something I really just don't understand. And Manchester City just haven't, in the games that they've lost, it's been a tendency where they haven't taken advantage of their dominance. And what happened here was they dominated, and then Zinchenko got the second yellow card, and Spurs had the quality to dispatch two goals and put them away. But if you're a Manchester City fan, I don't really know how I feel about this match, because I think that, if the two squads are even for the rest of the match, then who knows what happens, right? Like, it's difficult to win on the road as it stands, and it's even more difficult when you're down to 10 men. To Jared's point as well, there's a very good argument that Manchester City should have probably been down to 9 men. I don't really understand. I'm not going to repeat everything that Jared said, even though I tend to agree with it with respect to VAR in this instance. But as an Arsenal fan, and we'll get to that match a little bit later, I think one of the things that caused the result of that Arsenal match is the fact that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang hadn't played in almost a month. And he didn't play for almost a month because the VAR fourth official basically turned around and turned a yellow card to a red card. And even as an Arsenal fan, I would probably argue that that was correct, that the foul that he committed was one that warranted a red card. But the rules have to be equally applied. And how Sterling isn't off and how Manchester City, you know, why your question to me isn't, how are Manchester City going to deal with Raheem Sterling being out the next three matches after this result? That's what the question should be.
Right.
The fact that it's not, what is the point of VAR? if you're not going to equally apply the rules except to allow Mike Dean to attempt to take away an Arsenal goal by drawing lines like that Zach Galifianakis gif, like, you know, it's just ridiculous to watch the VAR official attempt to take away goals for what amounts to a toe, and then they can't get uniform calls for red cards. It's just ridiculous.
I think we can all agree that there will be, at some point, those changes that need to happen. It's just this teething process that we're going through right now in this first year where toenails are offside and red cards
burn it
are...
down.
Yeah.
God. I still maintain, you know, and... You know, the idea that I always, you know, put forward, if you just add another official at the end line, would have seen Mike Dean said, you know what, Serge Aurier got the ball. He's even making the, you know, pantomiming it with his hands. He got the ball. But only 2 minutes later, you know, Robbie Musto had a great point on this. Imagine if in that 2 minutes Spurs had scored.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah.
They blow the whistle, say, no, no. Not only is that not a goal, but it's a penalty on the other end. Good luck getting to your car, man. I mean, that is such an inherent flaw in this system. And this is something, you know, and you're turning soccer into, you know, the NFL. You're talking multiple stops. We're stopping. We're looking at stuff. The NBA is getting there. Baseball's been there. I mean, it is, oh, goodness. It is absolutely terrible. But another official on the end line would have had a square look of that tackle in the box and could have made it immediately. Is there an argument for it being a penalty? Yes, absolutely. But it wasn't called. And I don't see it enough to go the other way when you're looking at it frame by frame. So figure something out. Burn it down.
All right, boys, over to you. We have two topics left. We have Arsenal draw the Clarets and Hornets and Toffees share five. I wonder which one you're going to pick.
Oh, you know, last week when I was complaining about the dearth of Arsenal content on this pod, I think I probably earned this, but let's get it out of the way.
I mean, you know, I said I would, and here it is. Despite a number of headed goal efforts, Burnley and Arsenal see out a goalless draw, which sees the Gunners climb to 10th in the table. And here is the quiz question. Which team had more shots in this game? Was it Arsenal or Burnley?
I think it was Burnley.
It was Burnley. Would you believe it? Yeah, nice work on that one. That'll get you those 2 points. Burnley had 15. The Gunners had 13. So there you go. Crazy stat. It just seems Arsenal's away form continues to show little to no signs of improvement. They've now got, obviously, the new guy at the helm. What's the deal now? What do we need to do to start seeing that true forward momentum? Is it a case of waiting till next season now? What do we think?
Well, I think one of the things that needs to be discussed is we talked about Manchester City's losses earlier. Arsenal actually have the fewest losses in the Premier League this season outside of Liverpool.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
They have six as well. You know, it's the problem for Arsenal on the road and at home. I get where your question's coming from, but I think one of the issues, I mean, Arsenal lost to Brighton at home this year. They had Sheffield United at home and they couldn't get past the draw there. You know, the away form's concerning, but I think not closing out and winning matches at home, the Crystal Palace match comes to mind as well. Wolves, there are just so many home draws for Arsenal this year. That's where the points are being dropped. I mean, Arsenal are 10 behind Chelsea and what, 6 behind Spurs right now. But the, you know, those matches against Brighton and Hove, the match against Norwich, those kind of matches are the ones where Arsenal are kind of screwing themselves. I'll take a draw on the road most of the time. I mean, you look at a team like Burnley. Burnley just beat Manchester United. They've had a couple really good results at home against, you know, the quote unquote top six opposition. And they're a decent side. I mean, they play an overly physical brand of football. I think, you know, we talk about officiating all the time. One of the realities is that we still exist in a world where, you know, it's the Stoke City problem from long ago, where if you foul all the time, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, some a little harder, but you do it all the time. Mm-hmm. Officials don't call it as evenly as they call it for other teams, right? A foul for Burnley has to be harder than the same foul that would be called on Arsenal, right? Like, it's just, and I think it's true of a lot of teams, but I think the frustration here is that this is one of the first matches where when the starting 11 was released, I immediately had concerns, and it's been one of the first times that that's happened under Arteta, but the balance was kind of off. I think it's been demonstrated throughout the course of this season that Matthew Guendouzi and Granit Xhaka can't play with one another, that they do too much of the same stuff, that they're not upwardly mobile enough to be able to progress the ball up the pitch. And especially, you know, it's odd. Ozil couldn't get a match under Unai Emery, and now he's playing all the time in the starting 11 for Arteta, but he hasn't had an away assist in, I think, over a year. And that's not even to mention the fact that Pepe was dropped in favor of allowing Lacazette to go through the middle, but Lacazette hasn't scored an away goal in, I think, 2 years. Hmm. You know, you have this lineup that I think Burnley were compact. They had a lot of men behind the ball a lot. They played two strikers up front. I know that they would have hacked Pepe much like they did Saka, and then they would have booed him when he inevitably went off injured because they're apparently the Iowa State of the Premier League. But, you know, a pacey winger that has the ability to be able to break down defenses is a valuable asset. And I think Arteta's in a position where I think he worries about Pepe's ability to be able to cover defensively on the wing. But if that's your worry, pull Mesut Ozil, who's not doing anything, and put in a midfielder with some more athleticism and task that person of kind of veering off to the right side of the pitch a little bit and protecting Pepe as well. And Pepe is infinitely more likely to give you something than Ozil is. And I was shocked to not see Torreira in the lineup. You know, the renaissance of Shkodran Mustafi, who looked legitimately to have broken his ankle last week and yet is somehow in the starting 11. You got to respect the guy. You know, it's frustrating as an Arsenal fan to drop two more points in a match that they should have won. The next matches are Newcastle and Everton at home. This was a chance to kind of go into the winter break on a good foot. But, you know, Burnley probably should have won that match. They had an instance where the ball bounced off the crossbar and literally hit the line, and Mustafi headed it out of play. But, and I touched on this earlier, and this will be my last point on this, it's just the fact that Arsenal were made to suffer without Aubameyang for three matches in a row, rightly or wrongly, but he comes back into this match, he spurns two clear-cut chances, one so bad, I thought that his body got overtaken by the ghost of Kai Kamara. It was just, he booted it into the...
Specific reference.
Yeah, sorry for those that are not Sporting Kansas City fans. The man could miss an open net from a foot out, but
it's a Wondolowski. Let's just stick with that one. Yeah.
It's abhorrent, but you know, Lacazette blew a chance, a free open header, 90 seconds into the match. Arsenal had their chances to take this match by the scruff of the neck. But again, it's been the most surprising thing about this season is the fact that Arteta has done a lot to shore up the defensive side of the ball. Arsenal are light years better in defense now than they were under Unai Emery. But the problem is the fact that shoring up the defense has cost Arsenal dearly on the front end of the pitch, and if Aubameyang and Lacazette aren't scoring goals, then we're toast. Arsenal have one goal from a midfielder all year in the Premier League.
Mm, that's wow. I did not know that.
One. You know, the loss of Aaron Ramsey has really, really devastated this team's midfield punch, and you know, it's going to require new players, but Arteta's got to find some balance to allow scoring to occur. I mean, we're 25 matches into the campaign and Arsenal still have a goal differential of -2.
Mm-hmm. Fun fact about Kai Kamara, by the way, off topic. He actually did play once for Norwich City. He was on loan in 2013.
You know how I know that? Because he gave away a penalty to Arsenal by dragging down Olivier Giroud in the box in 2013 when I was there for my very first Arsenal game. So wow. Thank you, Kai Kamara, for Arsenal were down like 1-0 in the 80th minute and then won 3-1. Thanks in large part to the idiocy of Kai Kamara.
God love him.
Cheers.
It all comes full circle. Jared, what's your perception on this as obviously a Spurs fan, loving Arsenal's lack of success of recent times? But what do you think? Do you agree with Boyce in all these points?
I kind of do. I mean, my run on all of this has always been that, you know, taking my bias N17 hat off, there's always been just a wealth of talent on these Arsenal squads. And while we can see, you know, kind of renaissances under other managers and things like that, the fact of the matter is it's still got a lot of talent over there. So this is absolutely frustrating. I know if you're here in Kansas City because of the Super Bowl, Casey Gooners were displaced and they watched at our place at Strange Days Brewing, the place if you're in town, some great beer. Come stop on by 316 Oak Street in River Market.
good plug.
And it was they were dejected and I get it. I mean, just the frustrations of that. But Burnley is not a good team. I mean, they are just hanging around. Just some weird like stats here. Burnley, no, to Boyce's point, you know, we're talking about fouling and all of that. Burnley are second to last in the league in tackles. They are 17th in the league in shots, and that is after their 13-shot or 15-shot melee in this last match. And that vaulted them up from out of the basement this weekend. So I absolutely see the frustration. I think Arteta is obviously going to get a long lead on trying to figure out, you know, where some of these players fit. But, at the end of the day, I mean, I think – you know, Spurs are in slightly better shape with being able to challenge for top four, but that is in no way, you know, something that is, I would say, within the grasp. I mean, we need a few more results and a few more drop points from Chelsea. But if you're an Arsenal supporter, I think Arteta probably gets him. Boyce, I don't know if you probably agree with this. I mean, I think he gets the rest of the season. He gets two transfer windows, and we see where you guys are in November, December of next year.
I
have to think that, you know, they're going to give him time to kind of work some transfers and get people in. And I don't think there's anything bashful about them spending money. But I think he's got the players to win now. But who knows? Mm-hmm. He's inheriting another guy's locker room, right? So that's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I think this 2 weeks is going to do Arsenal a lot of good. I really wish that it would have been 2 weeks with 3 points instead of one, but I think the 2 week winter break is going to get a little bit closer to having an actual left back back, get some people healed, get some people rested, you know, find Alexander Lacazette's shooting boots wherever they've been, I don't know, stolen and lifted off to. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's still FA Cup and Europa League, so.
We'll see how it all unfolds.
But you have some high-dollar transfers coming in. I mean, no one can argue with a straight face that Nicola Pepe has paid dividends, right?
You got to plan.
So I think at that point, I mean, where they choose to spend money, where they're kind of locked in, I'm not up on Arsenal's books on that. But I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what kind of a facelift the squad does get, especially in the summertime.
All right, we are back with Jared for the last one, which is the Hornets and the Toffee Share 5. Watford and Everton see out a 5-goal thriller at Vicarage Road with 2 goals from Mina scored just before half-time. And, of course, our favourite Theo Walcott takes the 3 points for Everton. Final score here is 3-2 Everton. So, Jared, here's your quiz question. When was the last time Everton won a game after being 2 goals behind and away from home? Was it November 2017 or September 2015?
The older one.
It was, yes, the older one, September.
Had to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. September 2015, that'll get you those 2 points. They lost their previous 25 in a row when faced with that exact same situation. So Everton fans, of course, thinking, all right, game's over, but somehow they came back and won it 3-2. Everton were flirting with relegation in the first half of the season. We're thinking, oh my gosh, they're actually going to go down this season. But now they're ninth. Is it crisis averted here, Jared?
They're on their way, right? I mean, if our listeners don't remember, I made a bet with a fellow podcaster that Everton would finish bottom half of the table. And that bet is in clear danger. And I'm happy about that, right? I mean, you know, it's a storied club. You know, they bring in Carlo Ancelotti. you know, to kind of right the ship. And no one can argue that, you know, they haven't found form. I think there's still plenty of work to do. While, yes, they're sitting in ninth with 33 points, that only puts you 3 points clear of Palace in 14th. So we're starting to get to that part of the season where we're starting to see some layers. I think there's a break between Brighton in 15th, all the way down to Watford in 19th. You know, you only have 3 points separating there. Norwich are going down. As much as we love the Teemu Pukki, you know, goal onslaught early in the season, I think, you know, you're going to see them drop. And now this mid-table fight is starting, I think, starting with, you know, Palace and Southampton at 14 and 13, respectively, all the way up to, you know, who's going to finish fifth, because you only have 7 points between 14 and 5. So they're certainly worthy of the conversation. I think they'll absolutely stay up. Now, whether or not my wager is in jeopardy, yeah, I think it is. I think seeing how United, Wolves, Everton, Arsenal, and Burnley, who can just for some reason stick around there, along with Newcastle, it's going to be really interesting to kind of see how this plays out. Because I think I don't know what their schedule looks like coming up, but you have to wonder. Let's see. They've got home to Palace, at Arsenal, home to United, and then at Chelsea.
Ooh.
That's a run.
That's
so
a bit of a – yeah.
And then on the Ides of March, they host Liverpool. So that – you know, you have a – that's going to be a heck of a derby. So,
which I think could actually wrap up the Premier League for Liverpool if they win then. I think mathematically they said that, I think.
Oh, my goodness. How dismal for Sir Paul McCartney. You got to be kidding me. To seal it at Goodison Park. But I think, you know, they've definitely earned the conversation. It's going to, in those next five matches, I think if they can get, 9 points is a big ask, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's tough. But, you know, if you're almost gaining points on everyone because that's everyone you're competing with in the meat of the pack there. So I think the next three matches against Palace, Arsenal, and United, if they can get 6 points out of nine there, I think they'll actually be in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm. So not quite out of the woods, but suggesting that they might be all right here.
You know, they're trending in the right direction, right? So, you know, keep on going. And with Theo Walcott scoring goals, my goodness, anything can happen.
Boys, let me ask you, on Everton still, do you think they were foolish to reject $85 million for Richarlison?
I don't think that bid ever happened. The idea that somebody would value Richarlison at $85 million is absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, if the bid was legitimate, somebody offered $85 million for him, you absolutely have to take that. Now, the issue for Everton is their reinvestment strategy hasn't always been great. You know, they're out there buying the Theo Walcotts and
Iwobi,
you know, the Fabian Delph.
The Iwobis. Yeah, the Fabian Delph nonsense. I think it's hard to trust Everton with transfer funds, but you have to take $85 million. And I think as far as Watford are concerned in this match, what are you doing? Like, you're at home, you're up two goals, you concede two at the dying embers of the second half, and then Everton decides to give you a red card and you sacrifice a goal to Theo Walcott in the 90th minute. I mean, come on. Like, that's legitimately the worst way to lose. Like, it's just in talking about it and saying all those things out loud, I mean, you know, I know that Watford got Nigel Pearson in and everything was supposed to be good and they had a few good results, but they lost to Tranmere Rovers and now this? I mean, it's just bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Cuts was a tidy finish, I'll give him that.
Yeah,
you know,
but
had a bit of an open net on the back end, but you know, you had a recovering goalkeeper. I'll give it to him.
You had 20 minutes up a man. 20 minutes. I mean,
also true on another incredibly bonehead double yellow. I mean, that second foul on Etienne Capoue, like, why? What are you doing? Capoue's letting the ball run out of bounds, and Delph just comes up and just stomps on him. I don't get it.
I don't understand I don't understand that at all. I mean, Everton, I think, are obviously very fortunate to get out of this match with all 3 points, and good on them. You know, they've managed to right the ship a little bit, and I think Ancelotti deserves a lot of credit for that. But, I still can't help but look at this from the Watford side and think, like, you just can't allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. You can't be up 2 goals and lose, and you certainly can't be level and go up a man and then lose by allowing Theo Walcott to score. The man, I don't know how many espresso makers he has, but I think that's what he gifts himself when he does something good. He gets a pat on the back and a new coffee machine. So the most boring man in the entire Premier League is feeling pretty good about himself right now.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and move on to our second section. Of course, it's another round of Rumour Mill. As usual, I'm going to provide a line or quote from a newspaper or online resource. All you guys have to do is tell me if it was printed or something completely made up, so make believe. 2 points for a correct guess, and Boyce is up first with this one. On Tuesday last week, West Ham boss David Moyes said he wants to sign, quote, young, attractive, and hungry players who have resale value.
I mean, doesn't everybody? I don't know. I hate these questions from you because that seems like incredibly likely that that's a thing that they would like to do. I don't know. Yes, true.
It is true. Yeah, nice work. You kind of saw right through me there. It was The Guardian, though, that wrote those words about David Moyes. Young, attractive, and hungry. Are we a little bit concerned about David Moyes here?
Yeah. That's another person that should be really, really embarrassed with the results of this weekend. Uh-huh. That was abysmal from West Ham. What were they? They were up 3?
I think that, yeah. That sounds right.
It's just bad. Mm-hmm. It's just bad. And I mean, you know, it's one of those things with David Moyes. You know, bless that poor man. But this West Ham squad is a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Lucky to be hanging around still. All right, Jared, this next one is for you. Real Madrid manager Zidane vetoed a deal for Danish playmaker Christian Eriksen before the 27-year-old's move to Inter Milan.
Yeah. Why would they bid for him when they had Hazard? Sure, yeah. Who knew what happened?
It is true, yeah.
God, really?
AAS, I can't even say AS, as magazine in Spanish. Again, not made up, guys, I promise you. It exists. They apparently...
We're going to find out that James has actually incorporated and trademarked all of these names.
Oh, yeah. What was the other last week? Sport A or Sport 1?
Yeah, it was like, oh, it was from sports website. Like, oh, of course.
He's created his own fake LLC, and he's just out there pushing fake transfer news to screw with us. I can see it.
That's how
the off-red and much maligned sports website. Yes.
But you guys are still getting the points, so you know, everyone's a winner. Apparently that did happen. But do you think, I mean, all things considered now, obviously Spurs no longer with Christian Eriksen. Good move for Inter Milan. Everyone happy here, Jared?
Yeah, everyone's going to Inter Milan. Sounds like a party. That sounds awesome. Also, Serie A, like, he wanted to go where he wanted to play first team football. I don't think it would have been his first choice. Even his farewell message referenced, you know, sometimes you just want to try something new. You know, it was almost just like, hey, you know, you and I aren't, you know, we're just not working out anymore. I just really want to date other people.
I do not understand that transfer. I don't understand it at all. Like, I don't understand it from Christian Eriksen's perspective. I don't necessarily understand it from Inter's perspective. I mean, the team that won was Spurs, because they're getting 20 million euros for a player that
would have done it for a bag of balls, dude. Like,
yeah,
no,
I mean,
it was great.
I don't know what he's getting in weekly wages from Inter Milan, but you can't convince me that if he just held out for another 4 months, you wouldn't have massively increased his per wage packet. Credit to Levy and Spurs for getting, I mean,
this,
you know,
might
20,
be part of it, right? I mean, if the Real Madrid transfer bid is rejected, then if you're a Christian's agent, you're saying, look, the market has already soured now. Strike now. Spurs are willing to match his salary with Harry Kane, and he still wanted to leave. So at that point, Spurs are like, all right, screw it. Where do you want to go?
Yeah, see ya.
And I'm not familiar enough with Milan's, structure to see if they needed, you know, someone creative in the midfield. But hey, screw it. Who cares? check a sign.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, credit where credit's due. I mean, he was previously valued at some ridiculous sum by Levy that doesn't warrant repeating on this podcast. But
like a 125.
That's asinine. It's absolutely ridiculous. All right, James, let's just go to the next question. I'm going to be frustrated by the fact that that's preposterous.
All right, boys, so here it is for you. Harry Kane has spent a majority of his recovery time playing as himself in FIFA and, quote, looking for unique ways to improve his own game.
I hate you. This is ridiculous. I mean, you've had two truths, so the part of me thinks that it's just, I'm just going to go false, because even Harry Kane's not that ridiculous.
It is false, yeah, completely.
I wanted it to be true.
I think we all wanted it to be true, because it just sounds funny. Dele Alli might do that.
If you've replaced, if you replaced Harry Kane in that instance with Nicholas Bentner, then I would have had a little bit of a more difficult time.
Yeah, but Harry Kane is, I do believe he is actually playing FIFA during his recovery time, but he wasn't quoted as looking for unique ways to improve his own game with that. So, yeah, perhaps not. All right, let's go ahead and move on swiftly to our last section, of course, which is another round of player profile. So the same rules as before apply. The first person to shout their name and correctly guess their player wins those points from some clues. But you only get one guess, as an incorrect shot will freeze you out. This week, the category for these players is defenders. Defenders, obviously that means that they're defenders. Easy enough. All right, here we go. Player number one is a Frenchman. Joined his current club in 2014. Has only scored one EPL goal for his current club. Has recently been on loan to Stoke City. First name is Kurt. Wow.
I don't know.
Whoa. I have no idea who's.
Have I stumped you both?
Kurt Zuma.
Yes, Jared. There it is. Kurt.
Oh my God.
What a shout. I'll take that. Although you didn't call your name, so maybe I should disqualify you there, but no, I'm not going to be that mean.
Jared.
it is Kurt Zuma, though, so nice work on that. All right, player number two is an Englishman. He is 34 years of age. Spent a majority of his career at Chelsea.
Boyce.
Jared.
Yes, Boyce.
Gary Cahill?
Yes, sir, it is Gary Cahill. Nice work on that, and it'll get you those 2 points. The other clues on this one now. Plays for Crystal Palace. First name is Gary. Gary Cahill. Gotta love Gary Cahill.
You almost messed with me there, because I think I would argue that Gary Cahill spent the majority of his time at Bolton. But
that's a good point, actually. Yeah, I have to double-check that. He did spend a fair bit of time at Bolton. There was a club before that. I think it was Aston Villa. But yeah, good call. I might have to check that. But either way, you got the points. So nice work. Next player is another Englishman. Is 25 years of age. Wears the number 5 shirt. Has yet to score a Premier League goal.
Boyce.
Yes, Boyce.
Is it Harry Maguire?
It is not Harry Maguire, no, and that does freeze you out. Unlucky there. Jared, so these last clues are for you. Has yet to score a Premier League goal for his current club. Plays for Manchester City. These are tough this week. I'll give you that.
Number 5.
Google.
City. Not Googling. I'm just trying to figure if it's Kyle Walker or not. That's what he wears. Kyle Walker.
No, unlucky. It is John Stones. John.
He
doesn't play.
Johnny Stones. he does sometimes if he wants to. Depends what mood he's in. Next player is a Brazilian. Once played for Paris Saint-Germain. Also once played for Chelsea. Now plays.
Boyce.
Yes, Boyce.
David Luiz.
Yes, sir, it is. David Luiz, nice work on that, and that'll get you those 2 points. The other clues, now a defender at Arsenal. First name is David, and he took a bizarre free kick that sailed many yards over the bar.
Landed next to that shot that Aubameyang took against Burnley over the weekend. Good Lord.
Pick your favorite, right? All right, then. This is the last player of the game, and it is an Englishman. Once played for Leicester City.
Boyce.
Yes, Boyce.
Harry Maguire.
That is Harry Maguire. Yes. Damn. Nice work on that, and it'll get you those points. The last clue is currently plays for United. The most expensive defender currently. Still crazy.
Ridiculous.
His first name is Harry, not to be confused with the wizard Harry Potter. But yes, it is Harry Maguire. Nice work on that. And here are the scores. It actually was a real close one. It was kind of points for points here. But the final scores, Jared came away with 8. And boys, congratulations. You're back to winning ways. You came away with 10 and the win. How do you feel, bud?
You know, ready to take a two-week break. It was funny. Somebody was commenting earlier, Gunnar Grah in New Orleans is actually this weekend, and we're all headed there from the various points of the United States. And somebody was complaining that there actually hasn't been an Arsenal men's match during the weekend for, I think, the last 2 or 3 years. And my first and immediate thought was, thanks. I really... You know, I'm excited to go join my fellow Gunners in New Orleans and not have to worry about the men's team spoiling my entire trip. But the women's North London Derby is on Sunday morning. Ooh, so the good side of the Arsenal dressing room will be in there, and hopefully they can take down Spurs and make me feel a little bit better when I am immensely hungover on Sunday morning.
Love it. Love it, love it. Well, I shouldn't love it because I'm a Spurs fan, but anyway. Jared, commiserations, not quite getting it this week, but feeling pretty good, obviously. Obviously, Chiefs getting the Super Bowl that they needed, and then Spurs getting the win. And now we hope that they can lock up forward progression in the FA Cup, thanks to our replay on Wednesday. Fingers crossed, right?
Oh, man. You know, just at this point, you know, congratulations, boys. I guess I was due. I didn't get the streak. I only got the trend of 2 in a row. But obviously, you know, nothing put me in a bad mood now with Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. But going forward, you know, we've talked about this. The month of February is massive for Spurs. You know, advancing, getting past Southampton in a stupid replay. You have a match you should win at Villa Park. And then we're back in Champions League action, first leg against Leipzig. So, and then you play Chelsea at Stamford Bridge 3 days later. So February is, it's big. So those four matches, I think it's really going to give us kind of an idea of what the trend of the Spurs team is actually serious about contending for top four.
I like that, and especially with the Champions League too, you never really know. At this point it seems dire, but that's what we said last year around this time, and they made it to the final, so hey, who knows?
Just win, baby.
Just get those wins. We'll take it. Alright guys, well that'll conclude it for today. Thanks again as always to my guests Jared Bustamante and Boyce Richardson. If you like our quizzical outings, please do subscribe to our weekly shows. You can also follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time.